WSHU, the station you know, trust, and count on, is more relevant than ever. I'm WSHU News Director Terry Sheridan. Your support has enabled us to deliver what you need at a moment's notice, wherever you happen to be. We can tell stories that really matter, connecting facts and revealing the truths you need. Thank you for listening and supporting WSHU Public Radio. We're expanding our world together.
Additional assistance is now available for home and business owners who experienced damage from the August flooding that impacted Western Connecticut. Governor Ned Lamont says FEMA will open disaster recovery centers at locations across New Haven County. Residents and small business owners can visit if they have questions or need help with their applications.
Today, I'm really proud that the federal government is stepping up in a big way. They were here within weeks. They were there assessing the damage, making sure Connecticut almost immediately got that disaster declaration.
Lamont commended FEMA for the quick response in assessing storm damage and need. He says some residents have already gotten federal disaster aid. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. Connecticut Democrats want to make gun safety a campaign issue in this November's election. Two lawsuits over MTA congestion pricing are allowed to proceed. Southampton honors the Shinnecock tribe with its own day this month, and a local author speaks about the importance of multicultural children's books. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Connecticut Democrats want to make gun safety a campaign issue in this November's election, but Republicans are pushing back on that. WSHU's Ebong Udama reports.
October 1st marks the first anniversary of Connecticut's prohibition of the open carry of guns and the bulk purchase of firearms. Senate Democrats say it highlights the work they've done to help reduce gun violence, despite a Republican filibuster last year. Martin Looney is the state Senate president.
Some years the number of fatalities is up, but the overall instance of shootings is down. Sometimes it's the opposite of that. But over time, incrementally, we believe these laws will make a difference.
Republicans have defended their filibuster. They say their efforts were to enhance and strengthen the law, not kill it. In the meantime, public health, law enforcement, and community violence intervention groups are sponsoring a fourth annual statewide gun buyback and gun safe giveaway day this Saturday. Ebong Udama, WSH News.
A Manhattan judge has allowed two lawsuits to proceed against New York Governor Kathy Hochul over her decision to stop the MTA's congestion pricing plan. A coalition of environmental and transit groups have sued Hochul, saying the plan to charge drivers entering south of 60th Street should take effect. WSHU's Kevin Yu reports the judge's ruling means those cases can move forward.
One lawsuit alleges the governor has no right to stop the plan and violates the Traffic Mobility Act. That law requires the MTA to track and set up the tolling programs that charges vehicles entering and leaving Manhattan's Central Business District.
The new tolls were expected to bring in around $16 billion for MTA improvements, like making stations more accessible. The MTA's five-year capital plan was approved late last week, but it's still not clear where the funding will come from. United Illuminating, the power company that serves more than 340,000 Connecticut homes, wants to raise their rates. WSHU's Molly Ingram reports that state lawmakers are not on board.
In a statement, United Illuminating said they would ask the state's Public Utilities Regulatory Authority for $105 million in new revenues. To get there, they would raise rates by 9.3%. UI says they need the money for infrastructure projects. They were denied $130 million in new revenues last year and only approved for $22 million. Attorney General William Tong called the request tone-deaf. Republican Senate leaders again blamed Democrats for the already high electric bills and said without a special session to address the cost, rates would continue to rise. Governor Ned Lamont has not shown interest in a special session. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
K-12 Connecticut author Talia Akins Nunez speaks to WSHU about representation in children's books. Her latest highlights Puerto Rican history. That conversation is coming up.
Local support comes from Hartford Healthcare, the only health system in the Northeast, with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group. HartfordHealthcare.org.
The town of Southampton will honor the Shinnecock tribe with its own day in October. WSHU's Janice Roman has more.
The town plans to host its first annual Shinnecock Heritage Day this Tuesday at Southampton Town Hall. Officials say the celebration will highlight the Shinnecock Nation's history and contributions to the town. It is open to the entire community. Town officials designated October 1st as Shinnecock Heritage Day at a board meeting back in February. It marks the first time the town has hosted an event recognizing the nation's sovereignty since it was federally recognized in October of 2010 by the federal government. Town officials say there will be traditional food tasting, educational programming, and a panel discussion. They say it'll hopefully help bridge the Southampton and Shinnecock communities together. Janice Roman, WSHU News.
Ørsted has a new partner in two major offshore wind projects in our region. Eversource Energy sold its shares in the Northeast projects today to a global infrastructure company. Ørsted says the new ownership will bring more investments and experts to the project, which include Connecticut's first offshore wind farm and a Rhode Island wind farm that'll power New York. A new tick-borne disease has made its way to the Northeast. The first human case was reported in Connecticut. It comes from ticks native to the Gulf region of the southeastern U.S. Symptoms are said to be more mild than Rocky Mountain spotted fever, according to Hearst, Connecticut media. Stony Brook University is set to reopen a residence hall that's been closed to students since August. WSHU's Maya Duclay has more.
About 200 students will move into the newly renovated Amon Hall next Friday. But amenities like the laundry room, kitchen, and lounge will not be available. Students can use those facilities in nearby residence halls. A storm in late August made Stony Brook University's Gray and Amon Halls unlivable due to flooding. The storm knocked out more than 470 beds, forcing dozens of students to share triple rooms built to accommodate only two people. Some students were temporarily placed in a hotel. Gray Hall is still under reconstruction and will stay closed until the spring semester. Maya Duclay, WSHU News.
Connecticut author Talia Akins Nunez wrote Men of the 65th, The Barriquiners of the Korean War, to highlight Puerto Rican history in the United States. She is set to provide a lecture on the same topic at the New Haven Museum on Thursday, October 3rd. WSHU's Ada Uzenlar spoke with her before the event to learn more.
Talia, tell me about the origins of your career in writing children's books.
So I wanted to make sure that my kids had books that they could see themselves in, they could connect with. It was hard for me to find multicultural books. So my husband is Puerto Rican and I'm Black. And so I wanted my kids to be able to not only visually and culturally see themselves, but also as they developed into people, see themselves in books. And so it was very hard for me to find those books. So I started writing them.
So get me up to speed on this newest book.
So the 65th Infantry Regiment was the only Latino segregated unit in military history. So the book is about their history, and it really focuses on the Korean War, because before the Korean War, due to segregation practices, they weren't allowed to have larger roles in wars or just the military in general. And so it wasn't until the Korean War where they really kind of showed that they were a capable unit.
And this book got its start from a place of family too, right? Tell me more about it.
Actually, we were at a family gathering with my husband's family, and my husband's grandfather showed me a medal, and I was like, oh, this is so cool. You know, where'd you get this from? And, you know, all the questions started coming. And he said he was part of the famed 65th. I felt so embarrassed. I just felt horrible because I'd never heard of this unit. And so he told me a bit about the unit, And then on our way home, I Googled who these people were, but also, are there books about them? Because I wanted my kids to know about this part of history that their great-grandfather was a part of. And couldn't find anything. So then my husband, as he always says to me, you know, sometimes when I come across these things, he's like, so I guess you have to write it. And so I did.
On the subject matter, talk to me about why the men of the 65th volunteered to be a part of the country's military when its same civilians were discriminating against them. And how do you break that down for a kid to understand?
So one of the things that's actually very interesting about Puerto Rico is that it does sport some of the highest volunteer enlistment numbers of any state or territory in the United States. So serving the country is like a serious point of pride culturally. And it was actually pushed by some of the governments in Puerto Rico. It was always seen as when they couldn't engage in those direct combat roles like in World War I and World War II, that was disappointing. That was not good to the men who wanted to show that they are brave, wanted to show that they are heroes, courageous, all of those things. They were able to show that in the Korean War, but then they were also discriminated against. It's the best way to kind of explain it. I didn't try to sugarcoat it, but I gave it in a very strictly the facts kind of way so that the kids could see it for what it was, unjust, and not try to color that aspect or actually any aspect of it. And it's also done in more of a narrative style so that kids are engaged by it, so that, and actually people. Everyone tells me it doesn't feel like a history book, but you learn something.
That was children's book author Talia Akins Nunez speaking with WSHU's Ada Uzumar. For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio at WSHU.org or with the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford HealthCare. WSHU helps you stay connected to your community in ways that are meaningful to your daily life and our collective future. We need local, independent journalism now more than ever, and your support is vital. So please do your part right now. In fact, today is the final day of our fall fundraising drive. Visit WSHU.org. You can click on the donate button up at the top or give us a call if you'd like. That number is 800-777-9748. And to all those who contributed this time around, thank you so, so much for your support. I'm Sabrina Garone. Enjoy the rest of your day. I will speak to you tomorrow.